with Sophie Black.
Hello and welcome back. This week, my guest is the actor Sam Spruill, who's been in lots of things like The Hurt Locker, I'm reading from his Wikipedia page, London to Brighton, To Kill a King. He played Jack the Hat McVitie in Legend, which is the story about the craze where Tom Hardy played both of them. I mean, I guess you got to play both of them, haven't you? Didn't they? Anyway, I digress. He's a very thoughtful chap, and we always end up having great chats when I see him, and this is no exception. And we first of all talked about money and the sometimes thorny issue of who earns more.
She always used to earn more than me, and I never had a problem with that. And now I earn more than her, and she has a problem with that.
Really?
Yeah, that's... she doesn't like, or she feels uncomfortable about it not being a kind of equal contribution. She feels kind of diminished by that.
There's a conversation. I went for dinner with friends recently, and we were talking, and we suddenly realised that someone kind of cheekily kind of brought up, he kind of went, has anyone else got a situation? He was basically saying that his wife had inherited some money and she'd put it in her own account. And he's like, why not our joint account? I don't understand. And then it led us to have a conversation where we were all talking about how money works and how we sort it out. Mm. And with three couples, no one had a system or any idea, and everyone had a slight irritation with the, like,
with
maybe
the setup.
With the setup. And you sort of think, this must be the norm. Like, unless you are a couple whereby it's just one of you that goes out to work and it's very straightforward.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we haven't quite worked out the...
Yeah, but then that always comes up. So even if it is straightforward, it's like, well, I'm earning all the money, or I'm sure that kind of comes up when...
Definitely.
When you were having an argument, or...
But yeah, of course. But I also think that there was what one of the wives said at one point. She said, I just think it's important for women to be financially independent. And I kind of... That completely spoke to me in the thing that I've always thought that too.
Yeah.
But I wonder, I mean, it's...
Breaking free from maybe what your mum's position was.
Yes. Or maybe that's inherited, that idea, because of course we are. I mean, it's not like I still earn as well. And so, you know what I mean? It's quite an old fashioned idea. It's like a kind of Jane Austen idea that, you know, she's stuck writing in a room and do you know what I mean? It's like, we're not that. So we are, because we all have our own bank accounts. So why do we think there's always just something around the corner? Maybe that's like a kind of, I don't know.
That's a bit neurotic.
Well, that's what I'm worried. That's what I'm wondering. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's like an inherited, like, sort of feminist thing where, like, women are always, have always got to look out for themselves because someone could just come along and go, well, actually, that's not yours anymore.
Yeah. I think I'm actually, I think it's just, men have always had autonomy with regards to money and stuff like that and bank accounts, it feels, and women have been, or maybe that's a middle class thing. Because also I have an idea where even if the men were out earning, the women controlled the money as well.
So they were bringing it back, but the women were spending it on...
Well, the women would control it, so what it was spent on, I don't know. I'm in dangerous territory here about presuming how setups were. But I was really keen that we throw all money in the pot to try and kind of get rid of that. Yeah. And it hasn't got rid of it entirely. But I think it's got closer to that.
Yeah.
And also, my mum kind of gave up her work because my dad earned the majority of the money and his work was so full on. And I think that really fucked her up.
Really?
And so I really thought, I don't want, when I have a kid, I don't want Natalie to give up her work.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has actually also kind of been a reverse tension in the sense that she's found it a bit of a pressure from me. Not to take her foot off the pedal a bit. 'Cause she, when we met, she still is really successful, but she worked all the time.
Yeah.
And had a kind of career that I just thought was, she was so totally deserved, but so lucky to have.
Yeah.
And when we had a kid, I didn't want her to throw that away, yeah, essentially. No.
And did she, whereas she presumably, because often after, well, definitely after I had children, I wanted to spend as much time with them as I could.
Totally. And she's changed how she works. She works in film and she's a costume designer. So she has periods of very kind of 3-4 month periods of really intense work.
Yeah.
And which allows for nothing else. Really. Yeah. The hours are really long. And
because they kind of have to be first there and last.
Yes, exactly. And she also, and it's how she works as well. She works in a very intense way. And I think that, so she doesn't work in the summer now. And most films happen in the summer. They film in the summer.
Right.
And she didn't want to, she just didn't want to work in the summer because she wanted to have a summer holiday with that boy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's quite difficult because then you're like, well, you really narrow down your periods of when you can work.
Yeah.
And that's led to her, she's stuck to it, but it's also, she's found it, you know, the opportunities have slimmed down and that's something she's made her peace with, but also time she feels, you know, the normal stuff you feel with unemployment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas my work isn't as kind of intense over the summer usually, but I take lots of jobs over the summer, but just kind of unless you're like the lead, you're not going to be
in
every
day.
So so on the whole we can work something out with regards to me spending time with them or having a proper summer holiday or all that. When my boy was born, it simplified things for me.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't make it too complicated and you just had knew you had to get a job. And if you weren't going to get any acting work, then you had to just get another job.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and some people, especially artists, and when I say artists, I don't know whether I'm an artist, but you know, like, but who work in the arts, they are... they can't get their head around that.
No.
They can't.
Well, is it that to create you have to have an element of narcissism? Like you have to sort of be slightly inward looking, and so when you have a kid, that kind of has to. If you're doing it almost even vaguely right, that slightly has to go out the window.
Yeah.
So. It's quite a good thing if you can kind of... But I think also quite a useful thing to bring to what you're making too.
Yeah.
In that you suddenly grow up a bit and you're suddenly kind of...
Yes.
I mean, I imagine I'm not an actor, but that must, like, bring a level to things, to performance.
I don't know.
Understand... Like, I... Anyway, I mean, another thing we've talked about on this podcast, which... potentially makes us sound quite twattish, especially if you're listening before you have kids or whatever, or not, you know, without kids.
Yeah.
But I do think that having kids has, for me personally, brought a level of profundity to my life.
Yeah.
Like, it's taken the pressure off work in that way, if that's the way you looked at it as well, which is like, no, there's something to be grateful for, even if I have a shitty day.
Yeah, I think we're all looking for something to make us feel like we've arrived.
Yeah, 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 maybe.
And that when there's so much kind of travelling to the destination,
yeah,
that actually having kids is really good to make you feel like you just want something that helps you live in the moment a bit more.
Yeah.
And that really does it for me. And also, you're right about the narcissism. Actors are such a bunch of narcissistic arseholes, that anything that can take your gaze off yourself is brilliant.
It's healthy. Yeah.
And that with some parents doesn't happen.
No,
and
I know. I was thinking I know a few people who that hasn't quite happened.
Or they do it for a bit and then they kind of go back to their old ways as their kids get older, or they've got a really good partner who allows them to continue to be the narcissistic child that they always were.
And the child is just an extension of that narcissism. So there's like sort of selfies on Instagram and it's like, this is what my child is doing. Therefore, like it becomes...
Well, the whole Instagram thing is just the thing. I mean, I'm not a very good Instagrammer. I've been on Instagram for, I think, 5 years. And I think I've got 7 photos. But one of them is of my son.
Oh, there you go.
So... You know, it's fine. I'm just like the rest of them.
Yeah.
But it's really your kids as an extension of you in the world kind of repulses me.
Yeah.
But also sometimes you just can't help use them as a kind of advert for your own grown-upness and success, or whatever
also,
the fuck it is.
I wonder if there's a slightly, like, primal thing where I look at my daughter in a way that I don't look at my son, in the sense that I see her... Like, I don't intellectually, but I suddenly feel that and then I notice that I'm feeling it, where I sort of feel like she is, you know, I will... This is I'm using this in massive inverted commas because she'll be her own person. Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah.
But like, I will teach her to be a mother and she will teach her daughter to be a mother, or, you know, and a person and a woman and a whatever.
Totally.
And that is my everlasting life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, do you know what I mean?
Like, that's,
proper crazy.
Yeah.
But I can't, like, it comes into my head, not, just as a, like, a, it wafts and then you go, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a big problem with my son having no interest in football.
Right,
and I play football still. I play once a week with a bunch of old men. And I love it. And I just, and I love the kind of, I think I love the masculinity of it as well.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I'm pretty non-alpha male. But is that kind of...
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm totally shit.
Sorry, yeah.
No, but I'm totally shit at football as well. That's the other thing, is kind of, I'm terrible at it. But I just love it. And me and my son were going to play in the park for hours on end.
Yeah.
And it's just such an easy thing to do. And you don't have to... You just have to take a ball to the park and that's it. He's got absolutely no interest in football. He loves clothes. He loves Glee. He loves Minecraft. All the stuff that is not about getting out there and being boys.
Yeah.
And that is a kind of... that's been a much harder adjustment than I... Because I just also, you kind of go, well, I was always rubbish at football as a kid, so he'll be good. And all the things that you want to fix about your own childhood.
But also, I guess we live in a world where it's much easier to be who you want to be. And when we were kids, I mean, the reason why football is such a perfect, it's like a kind of bridge of communication for men, is that... It was kind of like, I mean, definitely my brother loves football too.
Yeah.
And he similarly has like a sadness. His son's just not quite as into it.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
But I wonder how many, there must be loads of men who love football because they were kind of like, they had to love football. And now they love football.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Like,
I think
that maybe...
I think there's just a social thing as well. Yeah. Like, we were always out in the park playing it, but we were always out in the park more on our own than we would allow our kids now to do.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And I have no idea. I think he's just much more comfortable in himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And than I ever was. And a much happier, I hope so anyway, a much happier kid.
Yeah.
Not that I was unhappy, but I think there was things about my childhood which were going on that affected me that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
Now I'm kind of like, oh yeah, maybe that was, maybe there was stuff going on that kind of push me towards more kind of masculine pursuits. Like, yeah. I grew up in a matriarchy, and
yes.
My dad wasn't around that much, yeah. even though he's a good dad.
Yeah, similar to my brother, actually. That's interesting.
And then
yeah.
when he was around, I would be really keen to interact with him on a level that he yeah. would know, and or that he would recognise and want to engage in. And that
yeah,
was sports
yeah.
and kind of physical pursuits yeah. and stuff like that.
Whereas your son's actually more comfortable in...
I think so. He's just yeah. more... He's just... I think he's like... I mean, I spent like 2 years at school crying and yeah. and about... Oh God, I don't know why I've gone into that, but about different things. But I think that we're locked into my mum's unhappiness,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really have that. So he just goes to school. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff, but he goes to school really happy every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of feels like a miracle.
Hello? I made a long car. I made a long car.
My feeling is you were quite young. You were one of the first to have kids, is that right?
I mean, I wasn't that young.
I mean...
Because everyone's yeah. had kids, so...
At 55.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I was, yeah, comparatively young. And there wasn't many... Yeah, I don't know what everyone was fucking doing.
Oh, we dicked about for ages.
I think actually I got together with someone who was a bit older as well. So,
yeah.
So there was a kind of more of a let's get
now
on and do
or
it.
Never. Yeah, yeah.
But that was, I think that was fine actually.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I wanted someone to. I think I responded quite well.
To being probably, rooted.
Yeah, or, well, that. I think I always wanted kids, but I responded quite well to someone going, I think we should get on with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And...
How old were you? Just...
I think I was... I'm 41 now. He's about to be 10, so I was 31.
God, you weren't that young then.
No.
How funny.
Exactly. It was just average.
Enough, my sister's just had a baby and she's 31 and I keep going, oh, she's you know, she's so young.
Yeah.
And I think, no, she's really not. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I knew lots of people having kids. I did know some people having kids around that time.
Your sister's, I mean, I'm not saying, but there's a bit of a gap.
What are you talking about?
No, I mean, I'd say...
I don't understand.
A year maximum.
Yeah, a year and a half. We're 18 months apart. No, but yeah, there's like 12 years between us.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And why was she so afterwards?
Why was she... Oh, because my dad married again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's really complicated.
But,
Yeah, no, I was realising that actually 30, 31 isn't in any way young to have a kid. But it is when very few of your friends... have children and...
Yeah, and it was totally fine apart from the fact that no one was really getting it.
Yeah.
So there was no one... Natalie had quite a lot of friends, like her best friend had a kid at the same time and she just... Her friends were all had kids or were having kids and so she seemed to have this network of people and yeah. I didn't really have that. I was kind of... I didn't really have a male friend who was having a child. And yeah. that was quite a bit of a ball ache, you know. I just wanted to kind of meet for coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I had so much, you know, I didn't have so much, but I've had time on my hands when I haven't been working and Natalie's been working. So I just wanted to, yeah, have that network. But...
Yeah.
It didn't, and everyone was just got on with it as normal, and no one was paying attention to the fact that my life had kind of exploded, and also, yeah, everything comes. It's so funny when you refer to it; it's kind of, it is a bit too negative, but
I
it's kind of
because
how
it's all about change, isn't
yeah.
it? Like you wouldn't change it for anything, and as we started off by saying, you were saying, like you, this has been the most sort of profoundly positive experience of your life, but then
did I say that?
You didn't. I'm not. You didn't say those exact words, but you were saying that like it's a really good thing.
Yeah.
To have that experience.
Yeah. It is a good thing, but I don't feel religious about it. You know,
no.
I don't feel because I suppose it's a bit of me. So many people can't have kids.
Yeah.
And so I'm a bit like, well, that's okay. You know, yeah. I mean, it's not if you really want children. It's devastating. But it's also, there's lots of, you know,
lots
we're talking about arriving.
Do.
There's
yeah.
lots of different routes to arrive, you
of
know.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And I also, when my kid was born, he had a terrible birth, as in he was born really ill and he'd had a stroke and
Whoa.
So a bit of his brain was damaged and, you know, it's all cut and he was in intensive care for 2 weeks.
What happened?
He just, the placenta stopped working and we were like, I remember we were, they asked us, we phoned up a bit worried and then the doctors said, well, come in and we'll check you out. And actually they were really worried, but they didn't tell us. And then
yeah.
we sat down, they fixed us up and to a machine. And then we were just running. We were all running. I think Natalie was being pushed to theatre. And we got to the theatre and there was still blood everywhere from the last caesarean.
Oh, my
and,
God.
But they said, just go. And then she was,
oh
and then
God.
She said, say goodbye. And I said, it all felt kind of, so I said goodbye and then they put her to sleep and then Sid was born. They kind of, you know, ripped
yeah.
him out. Feels a bit harsh, but, it,
yeah, but
that was essentially what they did. And then he just wasn't the placenta wasn't working. So he wasn't getting enough oxygen. So that and he had like a hole in his lung and he was like, he was not good. And the first time I saw him, actually, was he was being wheeled by. He was just wheeled by like that in front of me. And the doctor came up to me and said, he's not very well. And so all that... So we had, like, that awful start. And then he was a terrible sleeper. It was like everything seemed to kind of... So we had a year where we felt very banged up by it,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And...
Also, what I imagine is if you've had like a really traumatic birth or beginning,
yeah,
there's no time or space to recover from it because you've
yeah.
then got a newborn baby.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you had a road accident,
yeah,
and something bad happened,
yeah,
you'd then recuperate and then you could sleep and you'd have some time to get over it. But you don't.
No, you don't. You're just in it. And also, and then, you know, I was working as well and, and I think that was quite a transition. I think I took about 6 months to realise that I had a kid,
yeah.
which sounds awful. It is awful. But I think just to kind of to acknowledge that this was going to have an effect on my life. I wasn't very awake.
Yeah, right.
Or I wasn't very woke
yeah.
about it. You know, I was just thought, oh, well, just, I don't know what I was thinking about. I remember going out because I thought, I remember going out and wetting the baby's head. But I didn't really know what that meant. And I didn't even know whether you meant to take the... Anyway, I was just with some friends getting drunk. And Leslie called up and went, where the fuck are you? You know, well, just had a kid. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I just thought this is... And that was the kind of... it sounds so awful, but that was another... That was just a thing where I wasn't really engaged with the practicalities or the sustained.
Yeah, but that comes from, that's like copying something in a film. Or
yeah, totally,
like,
I was.
That's like out of a book, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then.
Where
and
my
that's
parents?
What
were my parents saying? Why weren't they saying? I don't think you should be. You know, it was absolutely no leadership from them
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, just that I think that comes from sort of not being around. You know, if you'd been, say, the fourth or the fifth person of your good friends to have kids,
yeah,
you would have slowly seen, oh, what it kind of...
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I feel like I had kids almost 10 years after you did.
Mm.
And I was, like, the last person to have kids. And then... And I remember a few people saying who had kids around you know, 3031 was sort of saying, oh my God, you are going to pick up that child and think, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? And you are going to, you know, and it's going to be a real shock, but it'll be okay and you'll get through it. And I remember thinking, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to feel like that.
Yeah.
Because I've had you banging on about it for the last 10 years. So I'm not going to do that. Like, there'll be other things, like feeling knackered all the fucking time because I'm in my 40s.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? But not that. So it's the other end of the, the line, but a different thing.
Yeah.
But I imagine if you, that I would have been, I had all kinds of like fantasies about children at that age probably.
Yeah.
That would have been not quite,
I think 6 months in, I was just, this is
what's going on.
This is what's going on. Sort yourself out. I had a kind of word with myself and I kind of actually apologised to Natalie. And I kind of sorted myself out a bit and realised that I wasn't just fighting that same kind of ambitious fight for work. I mean, I'm still ambitious. And that's sometimes like, you know, when people, oh, it's so difficult with kids and profession and stuff like that. I was like, well, you want it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So just, you know, just admit that.
Yeah.
Reconcile you to this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
stop.
Yeah.
And
you want all those things. You want a career and you want your child.
Yeah.
And so
you're
but lucky just, to have both.
Yeah, but I just got... And also, I remember having a kid and being in a play and it was in the West End. I couldn't believe I was in the West End. Because I've definitely got proper imposter syndrome. And so I was just like, I want to live this. I want to live every moment of this. I want to do the show and then I want to go out and I want to go to these members clubs that I've heard about and now I'm a member of because I'm doing the show. All these kind of really kind of trite, superficial things. And my friend Pete, who's in the play with me, was just go, you should, he hasn't got kids. He said, you should go home. You should go home and go home to your kid. And I used to hate him saying it. I was like, fuck off. It's my kids. I'm the parent, but
I'll make that decision.
Yeah, I'll make that decision. And I want to enjoy this moment because I spent a lot of my 20s out of work and really wanting to work. And now I'm in this and this just felt so good and such a kind of achievement. I wanted to soak it up.
Yeah.
And, but I was in, you know, I'd had a new kid, and I don't know. I feel really bad about that.
But did you have to maybe go through that a little bit to then realise?
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you'd sort of thought, oh,
totally,
he's saying it, I better, and then you'd do it, and then you'd always wonder.
Totally, and it's an ongoing process as well, where actually, I used to really enjoy the thought. Before Sid, because Sid is now 10, it's just fucking nuts. But before Sid, I used to really enjoy the thought or the actuality of going away with work. I thought that was really exciting. And now, and could never understand why people were missing families or whatever. You know, this is the life.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, as soon as I finish, I want to get back home.
Yeah.
I want to get on a flight and get back home.
Yeah.
And that's also to do with, I've done quite a lot of travelling now. So that comes with that. But it's also a kind of growing thing of me being really reliant on having a family.
Yeah.
And thinking that actually feeling, this is going to maybe sound awful, feeling safer and more at peace when I'm around them, even though they annoy the shite out of me. And I just can't, you know, sometimes the kind of deep resentment is just within me is just suffocating, but I really
don't want to be anywhere else.
Yeah, or I just really love them, yeah, and I really kind of am kind of, I guess, reconciled to the fact that it's not going to get better than this, you know.
No, so exactly.
So that's, but that's with age, maybe, or that's with, I don't know what that is.
That's the thing, before you have kids, that you can never explain, which is, I always find Louis C.K.'s stand-up really good about kids, and you can't really say it now, but I'm going to say it anyway.
You really can't.
You can't, I know. But he does have some wisdom about having kids, I think.
Does he?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to say it anyway.
I bet, like, maybe Harvey Weinstein's got wisdom about having kids.
Well, he might do.
Yeah, it's true. You can't... Yeah,
you never know. Yeah. You know, people are complex
beasts.
And
you can't... pick and choose your wisdom. It's either wisdom or
they
it isn't.
They might know stuff.
Regardless of where it comes
where
from.
Where their arseholes, exactly.
Anyway, Louis C.K., the masturbator.
Yeah, who I quote regularly on this.
Yeah.
No idea. He was talking about having a baby and how the thing that you're not prepared for, well, this is what I read him as saying, I could have got it wrong.
Yeah.
But was that when your baby wakes up in the night, for instance, when your tiny baby wakes up in the night and cries. Slightly different now with older toddlers, but still, like, when your baby cries in the night, you're not thinking, it's not like an alarm going off. That's your only real sort of knowledge of being woken before you have kids, which is like a car alarm in the street or your alarm clock or whatever.
Yeah.
But with your baby crying in the night, you're just like, oh, God, I hope they're okay. Like, your overriding thing is, I want them to be okay because I love them so much.
Yeah.
So that's an extension of that, which is, I don't want, you know, yes, I would like to go out for this thing at night.
Yeah.
But actually, I more want to see my son because he's done this today and I want to find out how it was.
Yeah.
And that's not a sacrifice, even though I might say, oh, sorry, I can't make it and I would like to.
Yeah.
But I've got to, you know, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Because actually, you're sort of doing it for you, not even for your son, because you want to find out if the baby's crying, if he's okay, or if, you know, how his day's gone or whatever. So it's a thing that you can't imagine, I don't think, properly.
But also, by the time you've been doing so many of those things that you're turning down.
Yeah.
Like, I remember you and Paul were talking about the Coach and Horses days. Great days.
They were.
And we'll go back to them. Mm. But...
You will, 10 years before we will.
Yeah. But,
you'll be there on your own.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be there on my own, but that's
guys.
All right. But also, those... They can... get a bit boring as well.
Yeah, totally.
And you need to kind of
Here's the thing.
Do something different.
But did you... Because you would sometimes come to those... Obviously, once you'd had your son, you'd come to those.
Yeah.
Was there a part of you that just... And I would say for most of that time, we won't have had... None of us would have had children.
No, I was thrilled to come to those when I was a kid. Yeah.
But would you... Was it quite... Did you just kind of dive in and pretend everything was like it used to be? Or were you sitting there thinking, oh, my God, they've...
Yeah, no, I wasn't thinking that at all. And also I was kind of, I think I've always been quite keen not to become a boring parent.
No,
Or not to be one of those who just, as like what we were talking about earlier, their life's value comes from their kids.
I
find that nauseating and
And horrible for the kids as well.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, I think there's quite a lot of things about being a parent that suddenly turns you into just a fucking boring cunt.
I'm definitely in that slight ballpark right now. Like, I definitely...
I wasn't aiming that at you.
No, I know, but I feel like I've got a kind of hands up because I sort of feel like with a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, a year apart, so it's been... I essentially had a baby for 2 years.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
So that kind of does make you... I do find, in a way that we were talking about football earlier, I sometimes find it a very lazy, easy way to connect with people.
Yeah.
Is to talk about their kids.
Yes.
And what's funny is since doing this and having really interesting, intense conversations about it,
yeah.
if I'm sitting next to someone on a bus,
yeah.
I'm quite match fit when it comes to conversations about kids.
Yeah.
And I'm quite aware of lots of other different schools of thought. So yeah. I go in quite hard.
Yeah.
Someone's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's rather personal, don't you think?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely, I'm aware that I sometimes hear myself coming out with things I thought, if, you know, at parties or whatever, that I think, there was always a thing in Private Eye that was taking the piss out of 9/11, not taking the piss out of 9/11, but taking the piss out of the fact that every newspaper headline had to be, you know, it's like, a banana's more expensive, brackets, probably because of 9/11. You know,
yeah,
it was like everything was brought back to that.
Yes.
And I feel like I can kind of like squeeze my kids into any conversation.
No, but I think that's
and
fine.
I said, but I need to slightly get away from it.
But you've got, it's fine. And we all do it. And whenever we go out with other parents without the kids, we all talk about our kids. And that's just fine. But it can make up for a kind of diminished interest in other subjects.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, and that's what I can't. It's partly to do with myself, you know, and it's partly to do with aging. You become less political, you become less kind of, you seeing less music or stuff that you used to do quite a lot of that would kind of root you in other aspects of life. You haven't got time for that, or you're too tired to feel like you can, you know, be involved. And I guess I don't think it's good enough. You know, I don't know whether I'm into a kind of, of course I'm into it, but fully into like the comfort of a family. And there's, I feel quite anti-theatrical quite a lot of the time because I'm surrounded by theatricals and my mum's a theatrical. And, but I went to see an Ibsen play recently. I can't even remember what it's called, but it's the one with Hayley Atwell and Tom Burke.
Right, I've been away and out of it. And
look, see, you've got two kids.
Yeah.
Don't even know
Although
about
I am married to somebody.
Oh, yes, of course,
a theatre producer. So theatre is the one thing that does remain on my radar. But...
Okay, well, I can't even remember the fucking play and I went to see it. But there was one, her character is really politically driven, but she's in love with this guy, but she doesn't want to get together with him, partly on the grounds that their love they will create a unit that will be just by its nature inward looking rather than outward looking, like or a kind of them against the world rather than them embracing the world.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite a kind of interesting notion that you kind of create these mini universes, you know, that that you are more loyal to rather than the kind of greater good. I think that's
I think that's so true. Mm. I can as you were saying it, I can identify with it. But I also think that there's an element of, in terms of having kids, not relationships so much.
Yeah.
But a sort of feeling of like that's your mini version of the greater good. So like for me, Zach was born 5 months before the EU referendum.
Yeah.
So I have this tiny baby. In fact, I was then pregnant with my second.
Right.
By that point, of course, because that's the dream. and so it was really... I found deeply shocking. Like, I've always been quite political, but I found it incredibly shocking and I wanted to get involved and I wanted to kind of, like, try and protect my kids' future.
Yeah.
So I now, in as much as I can do because I'm, I've got two young kids and blah, blah, but I work on a big you know, anti-Brexit podcast and do what I can in terms of that. And, you know, so like that has actually been a motivator in a way that I'd never, and I've got into making political podcasts, which is a complete, like I was doing comedy up to that point. Do you know what I mean? Like completely never done anything like that, even though I'd been interested in it.
Yeah.
And so actually I found that that's given me, that has, and maybe it is just a kind of very unique axis where you've got like a young baby and kind of like an unprecedented kind of thing in terms of our lifetime and our country and whatever.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, that was...
colliding.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if I think I probably would have wanted to have got involved pre-kids in some way. But I found that having kids, I felt very conscious of that. I felt really sad about the fact that they wouldn't have a European passport and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Really, really sad about it, not just for me. Maybe it was easier for me to paint it as kind of like, I mean, it's okay for you, but, you know,
Well, I take my hat off to you, Sophie, you know.
That's all I wanted.
End of
podcast. Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah. But I feel we're going through a period. I'm just injecting something a bit more controversial now.
Yeah, go on.
I think we're going through a period of, like, not letting things play out for our kids. So where we just we kind of micromanage how they are, or we're kind of, like, super concerned about childcare and how much contact time we have with them. And I remember, you know, when my mum gave up work, this is the kind of, this is such a whole mishmash of thoughts, but when my mum gave up work, she, you know, she wasn't happy. And actually, if she had carried on work, we would have seen her less. It would have been maybe a more chaotic life at home and trying to make it work. But her happiness would have kind of flooded into the house on her return. And I think that it would have been a kind of more positive thing than her kind of stopping work and staying at home. But she also felt compelled to do that, you know. But and I think that's kind of really affected how, you know, how what I was saying earlier, how I felt about Natalie giving up work, because I think it's really important that we bring what we're doing in the world and that energy and that engagement back to our kids and flood them with our own energy.
Open the front door and I can go out.
But schools is another, because Sid's just about to go to secondary school.
Yeah.
And that's another interesting thing, you know, about, it's quite revealing. I live in an area where it's really fantastic. We've got four great state schools. All, I mean, it's just, it's so lucky, and they all seem good. Yeah. They all seem, you know, got good results. They're all like, because they're, most of them, I think they're all academies. They're like, quite competitive.
Yeah.
And we're going to be the best school. We've travelled the length and breadth of the country to try and to kind of establish what makes a school the best school, you know. It's quite intense. And because my school was, while good, was dusty.
Yeah, right.
And and these schools are like, run like, you know, academies. They are academies, and they're also, their ambition is to be the best. And I don't remember my school being that. Yeah. I remember it just
getting by
but in a pretty good way.
Yeah.
And but there's some parents who are mates who are either thinking about grammar schools further away or private schools, and I think, again, that's like going back to the football thing. It's like, what do you want for your kids' childhood?
Yeah,
and lots of them haven't been to private schools or grammar schools.
Yeah.
They just went to normal schools. So why, what's making you choose this route for your child? And it's really personal and whatever, but I think it's kind of like, well, if I'm honest, I think it's like, I'm fundamentally against private school.
Yeah.
Putting that aside, I don't understand why all these parents would send their kids further afield when you've got four good schools in your area.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't... I'm also trying to understand why it makes me so angry.
That's the key, I think.
And why it makes me so angry to... about... yeah, it makes me so angry with them. And is it about that they're not investing in their community? Is there something kind of like... yeah, does it feel kind of... individual?
I think it... what is boring and disappointing on my part is the reason it made me angry was that what I realised is I never quite belonged into it. Yeah. So that's where that, like, well, I'm not going to have my kid feel like that.
Yeah.
I also think for your kids, especially living in London, I do know some kids who go to private school in London and have a very warped idea of what is normal.
See, I don't want any of that.
And
shit.
No, I couldn't deal with that. So I tell, I mean, apparently my son said to my sister the other day, she said she was admiring one of his toys, and he said, yeah, Mummy and Daddy work very hard. I was like, shit.
Yeah,
no. But, you know, that's what I want him to know, you know, and it's like, yeah, you don't want your kids to go, why do they have a shit car?
You know,
it's like, you're nine. What
no,
the fuck are you talking
that would
about?
Be...
I mean, people my kids are at nursery with talking about... well, you know, your kids are much more likely to get into Westminster if you send them to this school.
Yeah.
And I kind of
that's
smile
intense.
And go, I guess at this point, we don't really know whether that is
no, that's
the
so
right
intense.
Place. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's also fucking mental because you don't know who your kid is.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can think is, if your kid is really bright, then you're fine. They'll be fine wherever they go. If your kid is, like, dyslexic and brilliant at sport and... you can send them to a school that has amazing facilities and grounds that means that they can do any sport they want or play any instrument they want and they can, do you mean, all that kind of thing, then I can see real value in that if you can afford it.
Yeah.
But that's it. In terms of their academic achievement, I don't think you're really going
to be. I think it's also trying to work out or reconcile yourself to what is the route to happiness.
Yeah.
And how... we sometimes feel like we can control that for our kids, and I don't know whether, because I just don't know whether we can do that. I just don't.
No, of course.
It's like, and Natalie and I were talking about. She was like, "I think we should get Sid a tutor," and I was like, "Why? He's doing fine."
That's exactly.
He's like. And she was like, yeah, well, and lots of kids have got tutors at the moment, partly because of they're doing entrance exams or whatever. But I was like, she's like, I just don't want him to be, because he's really young for his age.
Yeah.
For his age, for his year. So he's born on the 30th of August. So
right,
he's like a year younger, essentially, than lots of people. And, he's also small. And so she's really kind of like, I just want him to not have another thing he's kind of behind in.
And also what's hard is if all the other kids are getting being tutored, then for him to be on the same...
I guess,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
but
it's hard.
But also he's like, he's doing fine.
Yeah.
He's in a middle group.
Yeah.
And a bit, again, with the ambition for your kids, it's like that everyone must... quite clearly burn brightly, and we must force this issue rather than, and they must be kind of visible in the world rather than burning bright in their own way quietly with invisibility
and
you
being
know.
Allowed to be to just like stretch and be who you want to be.
That was interesting, but why don't we talk about something else now?
Is there any advice that anyone gave you, either before you had your son or when he was a baby or a kid, that you think was like bad advice that you look back on and think, what were they thinking?
When we were trying to... get Sid to sleep. our friends got this kind of super nanny in, who interestingly hadn't had any kids. But that's now I look back, I'm like, did she really know? But anyway, she was like super confident with kids, and she gave, she told Jane and Trevor what to do with Dougal, and Dougal like just started sleeping. It was like he was swaddling, and then so we, this is fucking great. Let's get this woman in.
Yeah.
Let's sort this shit out.
And, yeah.
And so we got her in. We had a meeting. We did what she said, and then she came back. And none of what she said worked, and she made us feel like it was our fault, and really kind of made Natalie, especially, but both of us, but I think Natalie felt like a total failure, and just really, we were so tired, and you just couldn't see the wood for the trees.
Oh God!
And I think, yeah, so she was terrible, and you just have to kind of go with the flow that first year. I think if you're feeling kind of... The first year, for some people, was just amazing. I was like, my friend Joe, I was talking to his... Felix has just turned one. I was like... But since very early doors, he's just slept. So did their other kids, their older kids. Yeah. She just slept. I mean, it was just amazing how... What good fucking sleepers they were, that makes a total difference.
Yeah,
and
huge.
They were just kind of like, yeah, it's hard, but it's not that hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And but I think the first year is about getting through the first year, and then it plateaus, and then the kind of carnage is over, and you can kind of start wearing nicer clothes again, in the sense that we've got photos of ourselves. We look like we've all escaped from the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
We look totally fucking mad.
Yeah.
So just get through the first year.
Yeah.
No one ever said that. No one ever said it's carnage. Everyone just... I think you just have to go through your own personal experience. And my dad was just... He was good in the sense that he was just... he was just a calm presence. And he was just, you know, always kind of positive. And I think you do need a bit of positivity when you're dealing with... a small baby.
And perspective, I think, for me.
Yeah, he was great. He would just come round, and like his energy, the Sid would just always just chill out. Whereas with like he had colic and stuff like that.
God.
It was like it was carnage. I remember looking at Natalie actually at the end of the year, and she was convinced we were gonna split up. And I never thought that, but I think we did give each other a bit of a pat on the back.
Yeah,
saying, we survived that.
Yeah.
It's a bit brutal, wasn't it?
If someone was sitting here now who's about to have a baby,
yeah,
what would be your advice?
If the breastfeeding thing doesn't work, who gives a fuck? Your kid is going to be fine on formula. Because I hate that kind of fascistic kind of like, breast is best kind of thing, when I mean, like, so many kids survive in the world having not had breast milk, even though great if you can breastfeed, that's fine. And I think just try and remain open about ways to bring up a child. It might not be your or my way, but there's just kind of, like, my sister has no domestic skills whatsoever. I mean, really none. She can't cook. She can't clean. She's really like, but she is such an amazing mum. And she's got so much patience. And, you know, she's got nappies and wipes and them.
Yeah.
But she just, that kid is just happy because she's channeling all her energy into just being patient and being imaginative. And that's much more important than having certain things or, you know, certain types of nappies or certain types of fucking mattress on the cot, which is made of organic horse hair. I don't know. You know, just give yourself a break and don't set the bar too high.
Thank you so much to Sam Sproul for coming to talk to me. What a delight. We went on and on and on and on. And as delightful as he was to listen to, it was a fucking nightmare to edit. So thank you very much. I don't know who's going to be on next. I'm a little bit behind, as you may have noticed with my week delay last week. I'm really sorry about that. I've just moved house and made a radio series, and as I said last time, so I'm running out of excuses, really. But it will be somebody brilliant. If you have any ideas, maybe get in touch. I am on Twitter at Trapdoor Podcast or via my website, sophieblack.net. Anyway, I hope you're all good, and more in a couple of weeks.
Bye-bye.